Good morning, everyone. My name is Brian Gilchrist, and I am currently an assistant professor at Long Island University in Brooklyn, New York. My research interests include social determinants of health, relationship and urban violence, primarily among African American and Latino urban males. Before I begin, just to give you a little bit of background of how I conceptualized this project, for several years after I finished my master's of public health degree, I worked with adolescents in Brooklyn, New York, primarily black and Latino males, although I had young women in the groups that I worked for as well. And I was doing primarily youth empowerment through tobacco control. But as many of you probably can imagine, a lot of the participants in my tobacco control program needed a lot of other stuff that they weren't getting in their environments, whether it was in their homes or in their neighborhoods, primarily some type of positive male role model. So I became a lot more than just a tobacco control person for the adolescents. Well, I watched these teens develop through their early adolescence and into their late teens. And of course, they began to have their first romantic or intimate relationships. And sometimes I would be with the young men, especially, and we would be doing things. I mean, they play video games. We may go out for dinners or lunches. We may go to the movies. And I would notice that their phones would be going off, and they'd answer and say, "Well, I'm with Brian right now. I'll call you when I get home." And in 10 minutes, the phone would go off again, and then they'd share with me, "Well, last night I promised my girlfriend that I'd walk her home after we finished hanging out on the block, and I did that, and I went back home, and before I could get back home, she was calling me and complaining about something," and the list kind of goes on and on. And I was sitting, and I'm like, "Well, something's happening to these boys. I don't exactly know what is happening to them, but something's going on." And I didn't know what to call it. One day, I'm sitting in my car, listening to them talk again about this type of stuff, and it hit me. They're experiencing abuse. These young men are experiencing a type of relationship abuse. And I'm like, "Well, why in the world didn't you realize that before?" Because we don't talk about young men's experiences in relationships in those terms. We don't consider young men as being victims of abuse in relationships with young women. And so that's where this sort of began. So this presentation today is based on my dissertation work at the University of Maryland, where I developed an instrument to begin to measure what's going on with some of these young men. So the title of this presentation, "The Psychometric Investigation of a Newly Developed Survey to Measure Black Men's Risk of Non-Physical Dating Violence Perpetrated by a Girlfriend." So the purpose of this study was to develop a valid and reliable instrument to be used among urban black male populations ages 18 to 25 to assess the risk of their non-physical dating violence victimization. Just a little bit of background and what we believe was relevant for this study. Little is known about the factors influencing heterosexual male dating violence victimization, especially among black young adult males. There may be a cultural norm that allows women and men to believe moderate acts of dating violence, such as pushing, shoving, slapping, yelling, or stalking behaviors perpetrated by women are okay. And this study may begin a research trajectory that more objectively examines dating violence among heterosexual black couples. So, what are the psychometric properties, including the factor structure and reliability of the newly developed scales to measure non-physical dating violence victimization risk factors in a sample of urban black males age 18 to 25? The study aims were to conduct a principal component exploratory factor analysis of a quantitative dating violence victimization risk assessment instrument among a sample of inner city African black males, and to conduct reliability analysis of the same set of questions. This project was a non-experimental cross-sectional design, and it included two major research phases with four research activities. The first research phase was the formative phase, and then the second phase was actually the data collection and the analysis. So these were the four research activities that we conducted. During the formative phase, we conducted focus groups with samples from the target population. There was an expert panel review of the questions, and we pre-tested the questions again with a sample from the target population. Once the final survey was developed, we actually went out and collected the data and then proceeded with the analysis. So the study site was Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn has about 2.5 million residents, at least at the time that that I wrote this. It seems like it's gone up by about 1.5 million people since then. There's about 2.5 million people who live in Brooklyn. There are 11 distinct community districts with multiple neighborhoods in each district. And the district that we focused on is considered Central Brooklyn. And in Central Brooklyn, there's Bedford-Stuyvesant, or Bed-Stuy, as we like to call it, Crown Heights, Prospect Heights, and Brownsville. In Central Brooklyn, the population is 80% African-American or Black, and I'll explain that in a minute. 11% identify as Hispanic, 5% white, 29% consider themselves foreign-born, and 31% live below the poverty level. So just to explain a little bit about African-American versus Black, this was something that we discussed at length with my dissertation committee as well as my volunteer research team. And as you may be aware, New York is full of people from a lot of other places, a lot of other countries. And there's a large, diverse population of Black people who live in New York. So not every Black person in New York considers themselves or is what we consider African American. There are also a lot of people who are born, Black people who are born in New York to parents who have come from another Black country. And although they may actually be technically African American because they were born in the United States and they're a Black person, they don't necessarily identify as an African-American person because their parents are from another country. So when you go out and you talk to people and you ask people what's their nationality or where are they from, even if they were born in the United States, they may say Haiti, or they may say Jamaica, or they may say Trinidad. And so for the purposes of this study, we changed the term African-American to just Black, thinking that more people would be able to identify ethnically as Black versus the confusion about, well, I'm Jamaican or Nigerian American, and that's really African American, and it's more African American than you, and so on and so forth. So that's why, although the Department of Health uses the term African American, but on the street, that might not be the most appropriate term to describe the population. So recruitment. We conducted street intercept, non-random purposive sampling in an open plaza outside of a subway stop in Bed-Stuy. The sample size was 148, and we did offer an incentive to each young man who completed the survey, which was a round-trip metro card on the New York City subway system. The measures in the survey: knowledge, attitudes, perceived susceptibility, perceived severity, reward for threatening and controlling behavior, isolation, communication skills, girlfriend behaviors, and self behaviors. So, the results. Again, our N was 148. The mean age of our population was 22 years. 85.8% considered themselves or identified as Black. 9.5% identified themselves as a mix of Black and Latino. 74.3% identified as American, and 16.9% identified as Caribbean American. All right, so I don't know, this table, I've kind of condensed the results for each of the subscales and the entire instrument. The entire instrument was 96 items. Now, that's way too long, but hence the study. And so this is what this is the final table outlining what we found in the study. So with the knowledge scale, we started with 9 items, and the final number was 8 after the analysis. Attitude, 16 items at the inception, and after the analysis, we reduced it to 12 items. Perceived susceptibility was 9 and 9. There was no change. Perceived severity, we lost one question from 9 to 8. Reward for threatening and controlling behavior, there was no change. Isolation, there was no change. Communication skills, no change. Girlfriend behaviors, no change. 12 items and 12 items. And self behaviors, we did reduce by 1. Isolation, there was no change. 2 items. The next column are the factor loadings, and you can see you know, how many actual factor loadings fell out during the analysis. And so, however, I do have a table that kind of explains in a little more detail what those factor loadings were. And then just to move over the Chromebox Alpha, you see we have, you know, pretty good alphas for most of them. The communication skills, you know, we need to do a little bit more work in terms of the reliability at 0.61, but we were pretty pleased with the Chromebox Alphas overall. And then the composite scoring, this is how we summed up each scale to get a score to make a judgment on how much exposure a young man may be experiencing related to girlfriend dating violence behaviors. And so this is the next scale slide that I was talking about, where you get a little bit of a sense of how the factors fell out on each scale. So on the knowledge scale, as you see, we had 2 subscales, and they're titled knowledge about manipulative dating behaviors, dating violence behaviors, and knowledge about possessive or stalking dating behaviors. Attitude, there were 4 subscales. Attitude towards stalking behaviors, towards mental dating violence behaviors, towards verbal dating violence behaviors, and towards retaliatory dating violence behaviors. Perceived susceptibility, manipulative perception of manipulative and possessive dating violence, and susceptibility towards stalking behaviors. Perceived severity was the severity of stalking and possessive dating violence behaviors, and the severity of manipulative dating violence behaviors. Reward for threatening and controlling behaviors, as well as isolation, held together as one scale. Communication skills was actually quite neat, dating violence behaviors. Reward for positive communication skills, girlfriend behaviors, acts of intimidation, and verbal and possessive dating violence. And then self-behaviors were acts of manipulation or possessiveness and also verbal dating violence. Now, further investigation for each of these scales is going to be warranted, and that's what the last column illustrates. So for the knowledge items, we suggest right now that the scale be used as one scale because the way that the questions fell out, there was it was unclear. And you can see that for several of them in the further investigation column, I have the demand items in quotes because it seems like perhaps when the participants took the survey, that word demand versus actually asking about the experience may have confused them a bit. So as we move forward, we may play around with that and take that word demand out to see if it makes it more clear for young men who might take the survey. And then, as I said earlier, for the communication skills, we need to work on increasing that reliability coefficient. All right, so before I move on to the final discussion points, I just want to give you an idea of what those questions look like. So for each scale, the root of each question related directly to the factor that we were measuring. So the root for perceived susceptibility may have been, you know, how likely do you believe you will experience? And perceived severity, the root may have been, you know, how bad would it be if you experience? Okay. And then, but the stems of the questions were as follows. And these we got directly from, we started with the literature, of course, but the formative phase was extremely informative, and we're actually going to do some more work on that formative phase as well. Because young men really did enlighten us quite a bit on some of the things that they experienced and specifically how they are experiencing dating violence perpetrated by girlfriends. So the stems of the questions were as follows. Use threats to get you to do what she wants. Use guilt to get you to do what she wants. Use sex to get you to do what she wants. Stop you from leaving someplace or corner you against your will. Demand access to your cell phone, email, Facebook, or Twitter accounts. And, you know, I'm a little older than they are. There are some other technological sites that they're using now that are not captured in this. And then call you bad names, act jealous over you, call your phone or text you over and over again, and demand to know where you are and who you're with at all times. And as I said, we began with the items that from our literature review, but then when we did the focus groups with the young men, those items were modified significantly. So during the survey administration, we found that this methodology proved to be extremely effective. The target population was actually very enthusiastic regarding this study topic, and black men were not a hard-to-reach population in this particular study. Oftentimes, you hear that black men are very hard to reach in research. Now, obviously, I'm a black man, so that probably helps out a bit with this population. But what we found is if we go to where the black men are and we're offering something that is of interest to them, it was not difficult at all to recruit these young men to participate in this survey. And actually, they were going and they take our survey and then go back to their buildings or go around the corner or go up the block and bring their friends to come to complete the survey as well. So the methodology was extremely successful. The value to the dating violence research. We think that these items and the wording were developed to increase the cultural appropriateness for the particular target population. We believe we've updated, this is updated to include dating violence perpetration using technology, and some existing skills are a little more vague and very general. We've added more specific measures to our arsenal. In some cases, increased reliability compared to previously used measures, and the specific items were added that directly reflect some of the victimization experienced by the target population. Strengths, we think that the risk assessment instrument would be the first of its kind for this particular population. We utilized a community sample of black men compared to college students and emergency department populations, which we found in other studies where black men were analyzed in terms of their dating violence victimization. So these results may be more generalizable because of the community population, and we use qualitative methods to inform the instrument. We believe that this could be used as a risk assessment screening tool. Perhaps it could be incorporated into some of the technologies that we have heard about and will continue to hear about. It may be modified for men in other populations, not just black or African-American men. And we think that it could be also modified to include populations of women and girls as well. This was self-report data. The Street Intercept Administration, although it was successful, but noise and weather could have impeded our success or caused us to get less of a sample. Results are not generalizable to men in other cities and other men who belong to other social demographic populations. And we only use one measure for the internal consistency, which was the Chromebox Alpha. And these are just my acknowledgments: the Dissertation Committee, University of Maryland, College Park, New York City MTA, and the New York City Police Department. Thank you.